I have had horrible experiences with birds. I was haunted by birds when I was younger, and I'm not even kidding. Like, every time I would go outside, there never failed to be a bird somewhere. I know that sounds stupid because they're everywhere, but like, these birds were fucking staring at me. They were just like, fucking stupid ass beaks just pointed in my direction, and I didn't know, like, I'm in my young glory, I'm scared, because, I mean, these birds, I mean, I didn't get tall until I was in, like, in middle school. These birds were fucking huge, they're big black ass birds just staring at my ass every time I walked out of the house, and I thought it was an omen, like a death omen, and that I was gonna die.
Here's a death omen for you.
Philip K. Dick. It can't be.
Episode 48
Woo!
Of the Air Raid Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to Earth.
I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
Whoa, ass ahoy.
Of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Welcome, everybody, to the show that is now officially a long and drawn-out series.
Boom.
Thank you all. Thank you all for checking in with us and listening and downloading the show. Now a part of the Noisebeam Network. That's NOIZBEAM.com. You can go and check out just great podcasts on this new network brought to you by Fisher Communications. And we are super, super stoked to be a part of that.
Are you off your fucking meds or something?
Big news. Big news. Awesome. Well, yeah. Death omens, bird problems, baby still in the hospital. Got a lot of shit going on here. We got a great show planned for you today. Mr. Jeremy Grader from the Sibling Rivalry Podcast, one of the founding members of the Noisebeam Network, is going to be joining us here in a little bit. We're super excited to have him on. I'm going to talk with him a little bit about how he got started in radio. And all this stuff that he has started here. I mean, this was kind of his brainchild here, the Noisebeam Network. And yeah, I just thought it would be kind of cool to talk with him about his experience in radio. Working with professionals, and also talk a little bit about a guy he used to work with, Mr. Mike Webb, who is a radio personality here in the Seattle area that was actually murdered, I think maybe a year ago, a couple years ago or so. And it's just a crazy story. So we'll be having him on in a bit. Now, I went with that intro. I went with the bird intro because, yes, you've heard me talk about these woodpeckers that are destroying my home, ripping out the insulation, drilling holes into the siding. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. It's been a harrowing experience. Harrowing experience. Okay, so you all remember the story that I told in episode, I think it was 46. No, not 46. Maybe 45. I don't know. When the birds began drilling holes into the siding of our building once again. Every spring this kind of happens. They come back. They're called flickers. They're a type of woodpecker. Anyway, I stood out by my window and waited for them to come back and shot one with a BB gun. I did not kill it. Please do not worry. Do not be angry with me. But this bird problem is costing us thousands and thousands of dollars as a homeowners association every year, and we can't get them to go away. So anyway, I think these birds have kind of banded together and created an unnatural alliance between each other, and now they are all attacking our house tenfold.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
I mean, there is there's a window in our hallway that kind of looks out behind our building. We're on the top floor of our building here, and there is bird poop just all over the window now. Like, they are literally, like, taking, you know, if birds can run, they are taking running leaps. They're getting a running start, or in the bird's case, a flying start, and flying towards the window, and then, you know, flying up onto the roof. But before, you know, when they make that turn, like, it's like something out of Top Gun, you know? They come towards the window, and then they fly up really quick. I mean, the G-forces on this must be just incredible. These birds are amazing pilots. They're just coming towards the window, and then they turn up really quick and go straight up, and then they shit right at that point where they turn and go straight up into the air. And then the poop just, like, flies straight into the window. Mother
fuckers! Ah! No, Kelly Clarkson!
And these are pigeons, too, mind you. I mean, okay, so first we had the flicker problem. Then once the flickers drilled the holes in the siding, then the what are they called? These little the ones looking at me right now. Oh, little bastard. These little bastards. So it's like these, so the flickers started it, then the starlings came in, the crows came in and tore out all the insulation, used it for their other nests, and then these starlings came in and were nesting inside the walls. And now, since I kind of got rid of those, we patched up the hole with this, like, this steel mesh so they couldn't get through it. Couldn't get into the holes, and now the pigeons are pooping all over the windows. An unholy alliance, everyone. An unholy alliance. This is turning into a war. So if you see me standing in my window with a pellet gun or a BB gun, don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed. I'm not shooting anybody down below. I'm shooting at the sky. I'm shooting at the sky. I'm like in that scene in Point Break, where Keanu Reeves is chasing what's his butt, and he can't catch him, and then he falls, he breaks his leg or something like that, jumping from the wall during the chase scene, and he just fires into the air because he's so angry. That's me right now. Bam, 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 bam. I'm so angry, but I don't want to kill anybody because I'm a nice person. Because I'm a nice person. Anyway, like I said, we got a great show planned for you today. We are going to be featuring music today throughout the show by a band called Romeo and Juliet. You may remember one of the lady in this band, Leni, also known as Celine Ramadan. Very, very nice, very nice woman, and very awesome, just a great musician. Her and Ryan Love from the band Leni came on, let's see, on episode, 45, 44, 43, 42? I can't remember. I probably should have looked that up, right? But they, Leni, or Celine, is in this other band, Romeo and Juliet, with a guy, let's look this up so I don't get this wrong. That'd probably be a good thing, right? With a guy named John Michael Carestes from Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they kind of hooked up on Craigslist. They found each other on Craigslist and just kind of sent music back and forth, kind of like a postal service gig a little bit. But they make this really, really great music. It's kind of 60s-esque a little bit, darker, but still very, very good. And we're going to be featuring music by Romeo and Juliet throughout the episode today off of their album Month of May. And great, I was just signed out by my other computer here that is supposed to be playing the music, so we will sign back in. Bastards. But yeah, this is it's really good stuff, and this is the video that we were talking about with the band Lainey, where they made this video with Muppets, with like all these puppets and stuff. And I can't find the video anywhere. It's got to be out there. If one of you find it, you should let me know. You should really let me know, because I want to see this video, and I can't seem to find it anywhere. Maybe it's still under production or something like that. That makes sense. But anyway, yeah, so this band, Romeo and Juliet, you can find them romeoandjulietband.com. They're also on Bandcamp, romeoandjulietband.bandcamp.com. And they're on iTunes and Twitter and on the Facebook. And you can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/Romeo-Juliet or hyphen Juliet, whatever. Same kind of thing that we've got here. So anyway, we're going to go to our first musical break here by Romeo and Juliet. This song is called, let's see if I have it right, Another November. This is off the album Month of May. And we'll be right back with Jeremy Grader from the Sibling Rivalry podcast to talk with him about his life experience and his stories of working in professional radio and of his late great friend, Mike Webb. So stay tuned for that. I'm sure we'll get into some serious discussion. And we'll be right back.
Summer's cold, winter's here, the cold wind blows our own. And you are like a changing wind, when it ends, it begins again.
Another September comes again, this note I read from you. Darling, my love is true.
All right, we are back. Joined with me today is Mr. Jeremy Grader from the Sibling Rivalry podcast. How's it going, Jeremy?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
Sorry, sorry the crew can't be here. I miss having Stacey and Aaron here.
Do you feel naked?
I feel
without
naked.
Them here.
I feel like I'm kind of cheating on them. Because I know that my brother, he's just sitting at home right now, probably, you know, half drunk from drinking PBR all day.
Uh-huh. Twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah, and he'd probably love to be here, but, you know, he can't be.
He can't be. He's all the way over in New York, right?
Yeah, that's really inconvenient.
I would say so. But so, okay, so you have been doing the Sibling Rivalry podcast along with Stacey Black and your brother.
Yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Is it Aaron Grader or
no.
It's Aaron Ristow?
Aaron Ristow, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And how long have you guys been doing this thing?
Since before the internet.
Since before the internet.
Yeah. Now
it was well before Al Gore invented the world.
Totally. Way before that. We started around 2005. I think it was like August 2005.
Wow. Yeah. So you've been doing it for 6 years?
Yeah, we and what was his name? Adam Curry. I think he was the guy that started podcasting. He's the one that came up with the term. He was
really?
The old MTV VJ. I don't know if you remember him.
I recognize the name, but
he had the big blonde, like massive metal hair. If you're okay. Okay. But yeah, he like, you know, we were basically the first two is the way I like to look at it.
Yeah.
But no, we started back then and the show was quite different. We did a lot of really different, not different at the time, different from what we do now. It
right,
was really
right.
newsy and political because I was really heavy into politics at the time and
yeah.
studying politics at school. And my brother's also, he was a political science major. So we thought we'd, you know, have a different spin, a different take on things.
Right. Because you were younger and yeah. more hip.
Yeah. It turned out we were wrong about it.
You listened to Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything.
So it didn't go too well.
Nah.
We were just talking about this, too, before we started recording, too. Like, and I think every time I have another podcast host on this show,
yeah.
we always end up talking about the glory of podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, what it means to you, right?
Yeah.
And what we were talking about is, like, you guys started this show, you and your brother started this show, and you started off having a plan. A much more planned out show where you kind of went by a loose script on what you guys were going
to
talk about.
Yeah, and I mean, to some degree, we still do. I mean, I think any good podcast has to kind of follow some of the rules of radio.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's plenty of podcasts where it's a couple of dudes, you know, telling inside jokes in their basement that nobody else gets. And,
you know,
they've got one mic in the middle of the room that they forget how it works and
and
whatever. But, you know, you got to have some good gear and you got to know, you have to have somewhat of a direction with where you're going. The problem we had was that we took it way too seriously. Like we basically went, this is an opportunity for us to talk once a week and we can record it and see if it turns into anything.
Yeah.
And it just so happened the things we were really into were politics and news. I mean, I think Hurricane Katrina had hit right around the time we started.
Oh,
so we talked
yeah,
about that
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of the more we were doing it, we'd get through these like 3-6 month periods where we wouldn't do a show because we just weren't into it. Other things came up or whatever.
Slow news month.
Yeah. And, we just, you know, it started to become a chore. And so we decided a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, that, you know, we needed to have more fun with this. We needed to, you know, talk about the things that we actually were experiencing ourselves and not, you know, stuff that we read in the paper and have an opinion about because, you know, there's plenty of idiots doing that.
Right, right.
And they're getting paid a lot more.
Yeah, yeah, no shit. So you guys kind of started, when did you start just turning it into something that you know, was more loose and poop talk.
Yeah.
Let's go straight for the jugular here.
Yeah, we got pretty craptastic about 2 or 3 years ago. We just decided, you know, let's just have some fun with this. And you know, there's going to be wacky, you know, Antoine Dodson kind of things on the internet that we're going to love and want to play with or whatever.
Right.
That kind of stuff and just talk about whatever experiences we're having. And around that time, our friend Stacy she came over one night, was around the house for whatever, and we decided to bring her down and have her on the show. And it was great. Like, she laughed at all of our jokes, no matter how bad they were. and she always has awesome stories, and she hates the world and hates everyone.
Right, right.
So there's always just this awesome rage that comes from her.
Yeah.
So we talked about it. We're like, God, you know, we should really add her as a regular, you know, host, guest, whatever.
Yeah.
So we ran it by her, and she's like, yeah, well, you know, why not? Let's see what happens. And
cool.
So that's kind of what we've been doing.
So in its latest incarnation, you guys have been going strong for 4 years then? Or...
Probably three years. Yeah.
Sorry, my math is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, nobody told me there'd be math in podcasting.
Well, it may turn out that we do have to do a little bit of math because, as many of you know, we are all now part of the Noisebeam Network.
Yeah, buddy.
Brought to you by the good people at Fisher Communications, which is actually your regular employer.
Yeah, that's where I make my money to pay my mortgage.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And probably not enough.
No.
Right?
No.
So when you said you went to school to study political science.
Yeah.
How did you make the move from political science into talk radio?
It actually went the other way around. I was a horrible student. I dropped out of high school in my sophomore year.
Wow.
And thought that—
Drugs?
You know, no, actually the future was in movie theaters. I was going to go, you know, take tickets. Or something. I didn't need no stinking school. Who needs all this, you know, homework?
Dude, I'm making $5.50 an hour at the movie theater, and I get a discount.
I believe I started at
on popcorn.
$4.25 an hour.
$4.25
starting wage.
Oh,
but yeah, so I got into that, and you know, as it turns out, not much of a future there. But it did. It set me down the right path, which is really weird because I went from there to working at a video store and then to Starbucks, which doesn't really add a lot to the timeline of how this happened. But
right.
A buddy of mine was working for The Buzz, which back in the day was, you know, Tom Likas and all the Guy Talk or whatever.
Yeah.
And but he produced The Kennedy Show. Kennedy from MTV. I don't know if you remember her.
Yeah, I do. I do.
And
I used to think she was really cute. Yeah, everybody thought like would call her like dog face and stuff like that.
Oh no, I had a crush on her.
I had a huge crush on Kennedy.
Yeah. I don't know a teen boy that didn't, but
like, they all pretended like they didn't.
Yeah, at the time they didn't, but
it's like, oh, Kennedy's ugly.
Yeah, since they've grown up, they've fessed up, but
yeah.
So my buddy invited me in to watch, oddly enough, I ran into this guy who actually was a friend of my brother's at a party when my brother got back from the Peace Corps.
Okay.
And he said, hey, you should come down to the studio and watch a show sometime. Cause
Wait a minute. So where was this? This had to be what? LA?
No, this was here. Seattle.
Hey, is Kennedy from Seattle?
I don't know if she's from Seattle, but she lived here at the time. She was doing the show for The Buzz.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't she start out on MTV or did she start out on The Buzz?
No, she started on MTV.
Oh, okay. And then she made the move over to talk radio.
I don't know her well enough to know what brought her here, but for whatever reason, she moved up here, got into radio.
Can you get me her phone number?
Probably. You want to get her on the show?
Why not,
I'll bet we can make that happen.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good show so far.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about this show that everybody's listening to right now. Let's be super meta.
Yeah.
This show is amazing.
Totally. Yeah. So this guy, he was a producer for Kennedy Show. He says, hey, come on down to the studio. You're into radio. Let me show you how it works. And so I walked in the building and was like, I'm going to work here. Whatever it takes, I'm going to work here.
Okay.
So I applied for
and
a
this
job.
And this was Fisher.
No, right. this was Entercom at the time.
Entercom. Okay. Yeah.
They were they had Cairo, Cairo, The Buzz,
that's right.
KBSG.
Okay. Gotcha.
And the business station, which luckily needed a part-time weekend vacation coverage fill-in board operator sometimes.
Uh-huh.
So I applied for that very prestigious job and got it because I was able to convince the hiring manager was super into movies.
Really?
And so I was able to convince him that my skills as a projectionist and my time in the movie business would somehow translate into putting on a show in radio.
Yeah. Isn't that what it's all about, though? You just have to sell yourself.
Yeah, totally. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whoever has the best line of BS always wins.
Right,
so.
Right.
So, you know, it worked and I got in and that led into, you know, producing for the Mariners and the Seahawks. And eventually the first show I ever was the producer for was the Brian Suits show. And then he moved on to another station. And then shortly after that, I started working with Mike Webb.
Right, right. Now, so it seems like, because a lot of people that I've talked to now, Thunder from Stack of Dimes, mm-hmm. Didn't really, you know, study any type of like communications in college.
Right.
Apparently, well, he told me that he didn't even go to college.
Right.
For this kind of stuff.
Right.
But like what?
So yeah, I'm sorry.
Has times changed then in radio? Because it seems like, you know, talking to you and Thunder about getting jobs at the radio station, like mm-hmm. you guys had no real prior experience.
Yeah.
And not to say that that's a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
But like you got into this career mm-hmm. that has been pretty good for you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
And super interesting. Sounds like an awesome job
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that you both really love. And kind of really, you know, blossomed into this awesome career, and you didn't even have any training for it in the first place. Has things changed to where now they're not accepting anybody without like a college degree in communications?
You know, I don't know. I think it depends. I mean, I think with most jobs, if you're a likable person that's going to fit in with the team, I think they figure most anybody can learn just about anything.
Right, right.
And it's really not rocket science. I mean, you know, if you're trying to become like an engineer or something where you need a lot of technical knowledge.
Right. You're definitely going to need something for that. But if you're doing something like you're producing a radio show or you're just a board op, which is probably what you started out as, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're basically just running the board, making sure levels are correct and everything sounds good.
My first job was basically making sure that that one pot was up and that I hit the green button every 20 minutes. That was what I did for 4 hours on a Saturday or Sunday night, and that turned into producing and everything else.
Did you instantly enjoy it?
I did. I mean, the first job was I was working for KNWX, which doesn't exist anymore. It was a business station. So I couldn't have found the content more boring, but just the fact that I was being paid to make sure that people could hear something on the radio kind of blew me away.
Yeah.
So that was really fun for a while. And then all of a sudden I realized that I could watch TV while I was doing it too. So I'd sit there, I'd watch wrestling or whatever hit the button every 20 minutes. It was kind of like Lost, every 108 minutes you got to hit the button or the world comes to an end.
Same
deal.
the little symbols are flipping over and stuff. Yeah. In the corner of your mind, you're just now. Okay. Yeah.
I realized that I didn't actually answer the question you asked me a couple of questions ago, and it was how the school thing played out.
Yeah, my question actually was more rambling than it was actually a question. So no worries on that one.
But you had asked about how school played into my situation.
Right.
With me, it wasn't until I started working with Mike Webb, who was a hyper-political, very active liberal dude that truly believed in 98% of the stuff he said on the air.
And that
really kind of motivated me to really get into politics and to pay attention to what was going on in the world. And that was when I went, okay, I want to do something political with my life. I want to make a difference or whatever.
Yeah. Is that when you started the podcast with your brother then?
I think it was around the same time. Yeah, that must have played into it, on some level. I mean, I guess I don't remember specifically, but the timing makes sense. So let's go with yes on that one.
Okay. Rewriting history.
Yeah. But I started talking to my friends that worked in Congress as communications people or whatever and said, hey, how do I get into doing what you're doing? And they said, well, you don't have an education, even though you have all of the skills necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even interview you without a degree. So
go get
that and give me a call.
So did you have your GED at this point? You said you dropped out of high school.
Yeah, I dropped out of high school. At that point, I'd been in and out of school a bunch of different times. Finally got my diploma. I got an actual diploma. I don't remember if I had my AA at that point or not, but I eventually got that and then eventually graduated. And over the course of actually learning about politics and how it all works and really what a scam it is, it kind of turned me off to it. So I gave up on the political chase. Yeah. So
what did your parents think at that point in your life? I mean, they must have been pretty disappointed that you had dropped out of school, right?
Yeah.
Or was your relationship with your parents kind of strained at that point or something?
No, I mean, I've always had a good relationship with my mom. To this day, I haven't spoken to my dad in 10 years.
No shit.
There's some drama there. So, I don't know what my dad thinks. I mean, my mom, I mean, I could be... No offense to ditch diggers, but I mean, I could be out digging a ditch or, whatever, and she would be proud of me. I mean, I don't think I can fail in my mom's eyes. So, yeah.
So a good mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
good mother.
Very good mom. Yeah.
Good. And, where did you grow up?
Around here, Everett, Linwood area. Yeah.
Okay. And so you had to go back and get your GED. Right.
I got an actual diploma through a program at Edmonds Community College.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then studied a little bit on communications through that school or
not even that. It was all political science through Edmonds and then Shoreline Community College and then eventually graduated from WSU's online distance program.
Gotcha. And that's why you have all the WSU stuff
totally
in your little studio.
Yeah, it's funny cuz I've never been to Pullman. I've never stepped foot on the campus.
You got that pride anyway. You got that cougar pride.
It's not even that as much as like so many people in my family are Huskies that just to razz them, I'll wear a cougar hat or whatever. But then I do that and everyone thinks, oh, he's a proud coug. So I get sweatshirts and stuff for Christmas and birthdays. So like I've been showered with coug gifts that make it look like I'm this raging coug, proud dude or whatever.
Right. And I had no idea the amount of... Or what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, the amount of like pride that goes into these schools, between WSU UW.
Yeah, it's kind of fucked up.
I had no idea until a couple years ago for a bachelor party, we went to we took the groom out to a WSU UW basketball game on the UW campus. And I mean, just being in that, in the stands for that was just insane. I mean, because, like, you know, there's WSU people sitting next to UW people and everybody's yelling at each other. Pretty much. I mean, it was totally crazy. I'm not a big sports guy. I mean, I love the Seahawks. I love watching, watching football. But I've never really been a big basketball fan.
Okay.
And just to see, like, the craziness of the fans in the, in those stands, because it was packed. I mean, for a WSU UW game, I mean, those stands are just,
Full. I can imagine. I've only been to some Coug football games at Quest Field because, again, I'm not going to Pullman.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, the people get really into it.
Really into it. And, like, and you always see it on TV.
Yeah.
Like, because I went to a kind of a lesser college. I went to not lesser in the educational standard, but
lesser known
and just smaller school. And sports wasn't like a really huge thing. Sports pride wasn't a really huge thing, especially in the circles that I hung out with at Central Washington University in Ellensburg.
My brother-in-law went there.
It's a great school. Yeah. It really is. It was a wonderful place to go to school. But yeah, the sports thing wasn't as big as it is at one of these like Pac-10 schools.
Right.
And so I had never, you know, you always see it on TV or something like that on a, on like Friday Night Lights or something like that,
right.
You know, even though that's high school, but you know, people are really into that shit, dude. And it blew me away just going to that basketball game where, like, I remember this one guy in particular, this guy from Wazoo, and he was just totally decked out in Wazoo gear, and he was sitting right in front of where we were sitting in the bleachers. And he would just, like, whenever Wazoo would get the ball, he would just stand up and make himself as big as possible with his arms crossed, and he would just stand, like, you know, trying to block the view of all of us sitting behind him.
Because
we were all, you know, we were all UW guys. Or, well, the other guys were. I was wearing a flannel. Everybody else there that I was with was wearing the school colors, proudly wearing the school colors. And it was just so funny because they, you know, people, like, the guys that I was with would, like, yell stuff, you know, and there was one thing in particular that they were yelling over and over again, and I can't remember.
Yeah.
Which makes for a great
punchline to the
great
story.
Great punchline, yeah.
I know what you mean, though. I went to a Seahawks game, one of the playoff games that just from last season, and there was this dude, like, two rows in front of us that every time the Seahawks got the ball, no, it wasn't even that, it was kickoff. Whenever there was a kickoff, he stood up like he was ready to catch the ball. We were, like, four rows from the back of Quest Field. I mean, you could not, I mean, you could be farther away by four rows, but this guy stood up like he was ready to catch it, and he was going to return that thing himself.
Right.
And that,
right.
Like, you know, I'll stand up and I'll get excited and I'll scream when, you know, when, what's his name, the Beast throws 14 guys to the ground on his way to the end zone or whatever.
Yeah,
that's exciting
yeah.
stuff. But, like, people that get that into sports kind of freak me out. Like, I don't know, like, what else is missing in your life that that is, like, you get so jazzed that you're going to catch that ball.
Dude, I understand that part of it because when I'm watching the Seahawks here at my house, I will yell at that fucking TV. I will just yell at the top of my lungs when like, cause usually it's because the Seahawks have really messed up something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so I have been known to yell.
But I can see, like, that's disappointment. That is you saying, look, Seahawks, I have decided to give you my 4 hours this Sunday afternoon. Put on a show.
Yeah,
entertain
me
and come away with a win. And when they disappoint you like that, they deserve to be yelled at.
I only wish they could pipe in some sort of, like, microphone into my home, you know, like an IDSN line or something like that to the stadium so they could hear me yelling at home.
Well, the alternative, I guess, would be to do a podcast while you're watching the Seahawks.
That's
and
true. That's
it.
True. Yeah.
We should.
I'd have to turn
fun.
The gain levels way down.
Yeah. But we should do that. We should go to a game or something, and or not go to a game, but go to a bar and watch a game. And
maybe Noisebeam will set that up.
Yeah, maybe.
We might be able to pull something like that off.
That'd be pretty sweet.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Hey, so I want to switch gears here just a little bit
sure.
and talk with you. You are a brand new father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's 8 weeks old today, Maya.
8 weeks old.
Yeah.
And she is a cutie.
I'll say.
She is a cutie.
Yeah.
And, you know, before I had my own baby,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was like, you know, there's, most babies are ugly.
Yeah, they are.
You know, like, for the most part, every baby that I've seen, you know, not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm at the hospital constantly and seeing babies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Babies are cute, dude.
They are.
Babies are really cute. And I can now see, like, why people get this whole baby fever thing. Like, you know, I'm not going to do it myself,
mm-hmm.
you know? But, like, I can now kind of, I got this hint of where people are coming from when they have, like, huge, huge families.
Yeah. Yeah, my brother's wife is one of 14 kids.
14?
14.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What kind of, I mean, they must have been like a pretty religious family.
Yeah, I believe they're Catholic.
Okay,
yeah.
Why is it always, it's always the really hyper-religious people that have the...
Well, it's because the hyper-religious people believe in the, you know, not preventing the, you know, the semen from doing its job. And
that's
making
true.
Lots of babies. So yeah. if you take the goalie off the ice...
Right.
The
right.
other team's just going to run up the score on you. So.
Whoa, that is a good analogy, my friend. Or good metaphor. Yeah. So what's it feel like? What's it feel like to be a new dad?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me a year ago, you know, if I wanted to have kids, and some people were asking the question, I guess, you know, I probably would have said no, just because we had spent, I mean, we've been, my wife Cheryl and I have been together for 15 years. We've been married. This year is going to be our 10-year anniversary
wow.
of being married.
Wow.
And
congratulations.
Thanks. We just had a lot of other stuff to do. Like I had school to catch up on. I had this career that I wanted to pursue. And then I
mm-hmm.
midway through decided to go after a different one. And, and you know, kids just never really fit into the puzzle. And then once we were both done with school and had a few months to not do homework,
yeah.
all of a sudden it kind of felt like, you know, what's missing? There's something else we could be doing. We should be doing,
right.
should we be
right.
traveling?
Yeah.
Should we be, you know, doing whatever? And through, you know, some of our friends started having kids and we're really kind of showing examples of doing it right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, you know, kind of seeing that and seeing friends that had kids, but still kind of had their own lives and still went out and did stuff and weren't just living to make sure that food got into the kid's pie hole.
Right. Right.
Was kind of inspiring. And we're like, well, God, if they can do that, we could probably, that initial thought just kind of grew and took over. To the point where we're like, well, you know, let's give it a try and see what happens. You know, it's probably going to take 6 or 7 months on average. That's kind of what the research says. So, you know, we've got time to plan and kind of get ready and see what happens. And 5 weeks later, she was pregnant. So,
really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Didn't take long.
Yeah. It took a little while for us to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And I was always really surprised when hearing that. Too, like, because you know, we did kind of some research on it and
right.
stuff, and talking with other people, and it's like, yeah, when you're trying, it can take a long time.
Yeah,
like I think it took us like 3 months, four
wow.
months, and it's so funny to me that you know, white trash people can go out there and pump out like 30 kids with no problem whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, they have you know, kid after kid after kid after kid.
Yeah.
You know, with no problems whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
And then people like me and my wife, it takes a long time for us to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And then when we do get pregnant, there's all these fucking complications.
Right, of course. Have you seen Idiocracy?
I have, yes.
We are living in Idiocracy. I mean, that thing is our Bible. That's,
right,
that is
right.
the new prophecy of what's going
on. I've been having this conversation a lot with people lately because some people are pretty adamant about, you know, not comparing that movie to real life, but it does have some, pretty, I mean, the, let's be honest here. Stupid people are outbreeding
mm-hmm.
smart and collected people.
Right. Because the smart and collected people are spending months and years researching and getting educated and doing all the things that they want
right.
to do.
And saving up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other people aren't.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't want this to turn into a political discussion, but that's why Sarah Palin, in some circles, is winning.
By the way, did you hear in Bin Laden's stash, they found a copy of Nail and Palin?
Bullshit. You know, I saw.
I'm gonna keep spreading that rumor as long as I can.
I did want to actually bring this up really quick because I think it was off. It was either off of your Facebook page or Stack of Dimes Facebook page.
I think we all posted.
Yeah, but they did find. They're saying now that they found porn in his what would you call it? Like hideout
his bunker.
Or his complex
million-dollar bunker.
Right. Right. At some point, this just starts to sound a little bit like propaganda.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, what's the fucking point of putting this stuff out there?
I'm disappointed that they didn't say that he also had bags of pork rinds and bacon. And, you know.
Right,
just,
right.
Just everything to make this guy look like the biggest lying hypocrite.
Yeah. Ever. And he had a huge stash of GameCube games.
Totally.
Yeah.
He celebrates Britney Spears' entire collection.
Right, you know, right.
Just a big, he just eats at McDonald's.
He was really into Neo Geo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think at some, because I'm kind of looking through this thing, you know, all this news coming out. Like, first of all, they had a bunch of the information was totally made up about, like, the raid and everything like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they should have just, you know, they should stop saying
Right.
Stop saying anything about what happened and what they're finding out there.
Right.
You know, because it just doesn't do anybody any good. I mean, the people that are that believe in Osama bin Laden's bullshit are still just going to hold him up as a martyr.
Yeah.
Even more, you know, now that all this news is coming out. Oh, yeah, we found porn in his place.
Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck cares? But people are going to, you know, people on the other side are going to be saying, oh, it's just propaganda. It's just America. You know,
that's primarily why I got out of politics or out of the pursuit of it. I should say, like, you're never going to convince someone who firmly believes the opposite of you.
Yeah.
There's no,
you're only going to make each other angry.
You could have live webcast exactly what happened. I mean, you could have had cameras on their heads and broadcast the thing live on TV. And there would still be a percentage of the global population looking at that thing and going, ah, it's Hollywood. It's not real. That wasn't the real thing. They just shot that on a set somewhere.
Yeah.
Just like the moon landing. And I mean, it's the same with this birth
that
certificate.
Drives me crazy.
Birth certificate nonsense.
Oh,
and
my
all
God.
This crap. I just,
yeah. Yeah.
I just don't, I mean, and for a while, you know, I think that, well, I know I doubted the official 9/11 story and I still do to some degree because, I mean, even if you want to take it all the way to the extreme of, you know, we did it to ourselves and it was a missile that hit the Pentagon and you know, and not a plane or whatever. I mean, there's extremes all over the place. And no matter what, we're never going to know exactly what happened. I mean, we're just not. And so at some point you have to just accept that the common belief that's out there that is the official story is just going to kind of have to be it.
Yeah.
Because we're never going to know. And so, you know, in terms of bin Laden and whether or not he had porn and whatever, the dude's dead. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
The guy is not breathing any more of my oxygen. Good for me.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well said.
Yeah,
well
thanks.
Said. Thanks. Hey, let's go to our second musical break here. Of course, in this episode 48, we are featuring music by band Romeo and Juliet. Let's see. One part Seattle, one part Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Really, really great band. I really recommend that you guys check them out. You can go to their Facebook page, facebook.com/Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo-Juliet, and then RomeoandJulietBand.com. Check out their website. Really good music. And so the second song we're going to hear, let's see. This is called Red and Black off of the album Month of May, and we're going to be right back with Jeremy Grader from the Sibling Rivalry Podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about more about his time in radio and a good friend of his that he worked with for how many years?
About 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Mr. Mike Webb. And just a crazy story about how Mike Webb was murdered about 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be back in just a moment to talk with Jeremy about that. And here you go. Romeo and Juliet, Red and Black. We'll be back in a minute. It's turning. Hey, y'all, just a real quick word for our new friends at goodsfromthehoods.com. Goods from the Hoods takes old salvaged lath from old homes here in and around the Seattle area, and each piece of their furniture is stamped with the neighborhood and the year the house was built. This stuff is absolutely amazing. You really need to check out their website, goodsfromthehoods.com, and check out some of the pictures of their awesome furniture. I mean, just absolutely beautiful and totally, totally green. I know you guys are into the green stuff, green-built stuff. Check them out, goodsfromthehoods.com. Or you can go to air-raid.net, scroll down on the left-hand side of the page, and click on the Goods from the Hoods button on the Air Raid website. Check them out. Like them on Facebook. GoodsFromTheHoods.com. Joined by Jeremy Grader from the Sibling Rivalry podcast and the official, like, starter of things at the Noise Beam Network. This is like your brainchild, wasn't it?
Not exactly. I think I'm one of three key players that I think put it into motion.
Okay. It was you and Thunder from Stack of Dimes.
Yeah, I think we were the generals in the army. But the guy whose idea it was, you haven't even met yet. His name's Travis. He's effectively going to be our program director when he gets back from his paternity leave. He has a 6-week-old baby.
Damn it, everybody is having babies.
Yeah.
Is he a smart guy? He's not like an idiocracy kind of character?
No, no, no. He's a wicked genius. He's got tons of just amazing ideas, and this was one of his. I mean,
right.
I think it was 2 years ago, I was sitting in his backyard, and we're having a couple of drinks, and he says, "Hey, I've got this idea. What would you think about putting a bunch of podcasts together and kind of making this network thing?" And I was just like, yeah, I'm in.
So he had the initial idea.
Yeah.
I thought it was you guys.
No, it was his idea. And then he had pitched it to Fisher a couple of different times, and it got shot down over and over again, because in radio, they tend to do this thing where whenever there's a new idea, it gets pitched and somebody says, "Oh, well, who else is doing it?" And when the answer is nobody,
right.
I mean, that's not Fisher. That's everybody. That's the industry.
Yeah. It's the old world of radio. It's the good old boy network.
Yeah.
Kind
of. So it got shot down a couple of times, and fast forward through a bunch of kind of crazy radio drama stuff, the right person, who's Allison, who you've met.
Right.
She heard about the idea and just went, "Why are we not doing this?"
Yeah.
And she, you know, on kind of the corporate side, helped get Travis in front of the right people to get it approved there. And Travis then came to me and Kevin and went, "If we're going to do this, we need shows. We need more than you two. So go find us some people." And that was where we reached out to all of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm super excited about it. I know that everybody else that's involved is super excited about it for all the right reasons, because it's super exciting.
Yeah. It really is innovative. I mean, there's a couple other cities, I think, that are trying something similar. They're not doing a very good job, and they're relying really heavily on a bunch of out-of-work radio guys that are out of work for a reason.
Yeah.
And the fact that they turned to us and said, "Hey, go find what the kids are doing, and let's just keep trying things until it works."
Yeah.
I mean, they are counting on this working, and that is really exciting for them to say, "We're not only going to take a gamble, but we're going to throw all sorts of power behind this thing to make sure that it pays off."
So, right. And Fisher seems like a really good company. You know, I know that not only I, but a couple of the guys and some of the other shows were kind of, you know, weary a little bit about, you know, how much control Fisher was going to want to have on all of our shows and things like that. And so then we go up to this meeting, and there's like helicopters taking off above our heads.
The place is a palace, right?
Which is, holy shit, dude. Fisher Plaza is amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Super, super like high-tech building.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it was, yeah, it was super, super surreal. Like they were recording the news when we walked in, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Through the building and stuff like that, which was crazy.
Yeah.
We got to see Steve Poole's office.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's a good guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
I've heard things.
Yeah, I've heard things too. It's funny that whenever people hear that I work, you know, for I work for Como Radio.
Right, right.
And whenever people hear that I work for Como, they always go, "Oh, yeah, Steve Poole. God, Steve. You know, that guy never changes. He's looked the same since God,
has had the same haircut since like 1980."
Yeah, they always say that he's looked the same forever and there's
He doesn't
always,
age.
There's always a story of he was supposed to speak at my high school, but he ended up bailing for whatever reason.
Right,
like,
right.
There's always some story like that. But when you figure the guy has been doing this for like 150 years, there had to be a few times where something came up. But it's just funny that someone's always got a story because, you know, however many schools have how many hundreds of students that happened to. So
right.
It's always funny.
Well, after all, Steve Poole's real name is Steve Cullen. He is a vampire. and yeah, he's been around for like 500, 600 years or something like that. Guy does not age, I swear to God.
I haven't seen him in the daylight. He always does the evening news.
Yeah, he might sparkle. Yeah. His skin might sparkle when he hits sunlight. So we were talking a little bit earlier about how you kind of got started in radio. You started working with Cairo mm-hmm. for Intercom.
Yep.
And then What was the first show that you worked, with?
The very first show was the Brian Suits show.
Brian Suits show. Yeah. Okay. And what was that? Political? Or?
Yeah, it was political. He's kind of a right-leaning guy. He's been in the National Guard forever. He's fought in, you know, Bosnia and Iraq, and he helped out in the L.A. riots. And probably one of the quickest-witted,
helped out in the L.A. riots? Like he started the L.A. riots?
He helped with the zip-tying and beating down of all the bad guys. But... it just wildly quick-witted, just super genius dude, and to the point where and he's a conservative guy or whatever, but that never shined through. Is that the right
shown through
that never came through as much as the comedy. The guy is just a really funny dude,
right.
So I learned a lot about, you know, I guess timing and you know entertainment value in a radio broadcast working with him.
Okay. And then from there, you went on to work with Mike Webb.
Right.
Okay. And so Mike Webb was kind of on the other side of the spectrum, right?
He
was very, very left-leaning. And
yeah.
Now, I don't think I ever heard his show. Can you tell us a little bit about what his show was like?
It was on late at night, usually like a 9 o'clock to midnight, 10 o'clock to midnight kind of thing. Super, super liberal, which means we had tons of fun during the Bush administration. I mean, you know, I mean, you couldn't have a rainstorm without him somehow being to blame. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, not only that, but I mean, the guy was just a sound drop machine.
Oh God. Yeah. The audio, it was just a treasure trove every day.
Good God.
So we spent a lot of time beating the hell out of the guy and
George Bush, not Mike Webb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we did a lot of really kind of unique stuff considering that we were on so late in Seattle. I think kind of the keystone, the thing, the one show that I produced that I'm to this day the most proud of was the one night where at 10 o'clock at night, we were able to get Congressman Jim McDermott in the studio with us, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam and a local Muslim activist guy in the same room,
really,
a month before the war in Iraq, talking about why the war in Iraq was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah,
I mean, what a wild cast of characters that is to have in the same room at 10 o'clock at night in Seattle.
Right.
You know, because getting anyone to do something at 10 o'clock at night is always a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, even just getting someone on the phone, but to have these guys come in and spend an hour. I mean, these are three people that I really looked up to and had, you know, a really interesting perspective on why, you know, it was the wrong thing to do. And so to get them in the room with this guy who had just been screaming from the hilltop about how we were going to be going to war with the wrong people and then to be just weeks away from proof of everything he'd been saying coming true. We
had
this superstar lineup. So But it was that kind of thing where, you know, we had, you know, UN weapons inspectors on talking about, you know, what was going on in Iraq. And
was the show always on at 10 o'clock for the life of it?
It bounced back and forth from 9 to 10. Okay. It was always that late night kind of thing.
Gotcha. Know? What was the listenership like?
You know, I don't know. I probably should care
about
that.
Was it a very popular show?
It was among people, among the believers, you know?
Right.
A lot of people, I think, probably thought Mike was a little crazy and a little too far out there. But I think if you're not a little crazy and a little far out there, then nobody's going to notice you.
Right. So, yeah. Well, that's kind of why the Fox News Network has such high viewership and listenership on the radio.
Yeah. And you know, I mean,
because they scream the loudest.
And I think that's an interesting analogy. I think the thing that might be a little different is that I do think that Mike really believed almost everything that he said,
mm-hmm.
where I think the guys at Fox know what they're doing. You know, I mean,
right.
I think they very carefully deliver a message that maybe they don't 100% believe in themselves,
but they're
selling,
but they're
a
doing
product.
It. It's a, yeah. They're selling a product. Yeah, totally. Let's see. How long did that show last?
I think it was on about close to 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And then,
did it get canceled?
Yeah, it got canceled. There was a situation where Mike had left. This was unfortunately kind of a common thing. There was a quick little grocery store, Circle K kind of thing,
three
blocks up the street. And Mike was a huge rock star drinker.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of the rock star stuff. And was it Rockstar? It had to be Rockstar. And so one night he ran out and decided in the middle of a commercial break or a news break that he had to run up the store and get some more. And while he was on the road, somebody smashed into his car. And obviously then he's dealing with being in an accident when he needs to be back on the air in about 4 minutes.
Right.
So he's off the air. I don't think I was working with him that night. But I think he was off the air for probably a good half hour, 45 minutes or something. And so, you know, back at the station, they're tap dancing, trying to figure out how to fill and everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he kind of got in trouble for that, but it wasn't that big of a deal until he was accused of insurance fraud in the, you know, proceedings that followed that.
Insurance fraud for the accident.
Yeah. He was basically trying to.
What?
My understanding was that the accusation was that he was trying to get an insurance company to pay for the damage that he didn't have. Like they say he falsified documents that he had, had Geico insurance or whatever. And Geico said they didn't or whatever. So it got really ugly. And basically the company kind of felt like, when the story came out, it came out in the papers. Mike didn't go to the station and say, "Hey, I'm in the middle of this thing. It's a witch
hunt.
Don't buy it, but just be ready. Here's what's going to happen." So instead they read about it in the paper and the station goes, "Hey, you know, we're on your side with this kind of stuff, but give us a chance to be on your side before the press is calling us, asking us what we're going to do." And so they actually let him go at that point.
Really?
Yeah. And whether they believed him or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they just said, "Hey, that's not the way that we play here. So we're done." So then he left and then continued his online show for, I think, a year or so.
So he had kind of his own podcast.
He did, yeah. He did a live stream from his house every night, you know, a couple hours, 9 to 11, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Still, you know, talking to a lot of big guests and taking calls and doing a lot of this kind of stuff.
And then what transpired? Because at some point there, he had disappeared, correct?
Right. Yeah.
And nobody had heard from him for a while.
Yeah.
How close were you to Mike?
Well, yeah, I think we were pretty good friends. I think, you know, it wasn't until after he was killed that I really realized how much of a mentor he had become. Because I learned a lot about audio editing and about, you know, like I mentioned what I learned from Brian in terms of timing and putting on a show.
Right.
That was really kind of, you know, radio 101. With Mike, it was another level. I mean, the guy
with Mike,
he had been you know?
He had been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
Too,
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a pro.
Yeah. I mean, he was a DJ back in the '70s in San Francisco and he'd just been around audio his entire life. And so working with him, I really realized, you know, much too late, that I'd learned pretty much everything that I know and apply to radio now from working with him.
Yeah. re-in contact with him when he was when he left the station?
Yeah, oddly enough, he, I mean, you know, I would appear on his show and we would do, you know, State of the Union shows together and stuff. And so we still talked pretty regularly, and we were actually in the middle of, he was having conversations with Air America, at least at the local stations here.
Right, right.
And that was around, and they were talking about bringing him on. And he and I were talking about trying to take his online thing to become, you know, kind of a bigger podcast kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd been talking back and forth, and one Friday, we hadn't talked in a couple of weeks or something. I called him on a Friday, and he said, yeah, hey, I'm super swamped. Can I call you back? And I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. So I didn't hear from him for a few days. And then sometime, I think in the middle of the next week, I want to say it was his sister called me and asked if I'd heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't. And I said, you know, he was going to call me back on Friday, and he never did. And that was where she said, you know, well, we're really concerned because he's, you know, nobody's heard from him. We haven't heard from him in days. And we don't know if he's just, you know, taken off, if there's something wrong, if he's sick. Like, we're just really getting worried.
Right, right.
So if you hear from him, let me know. And I was like, okay, yeah, I will. And kind of left it at that. And you know, Mike, he lived a pretty secretive life. I mean, he kind of told different people different things and kind of lived these different lives, you know, with each of them. Not that he was up to anything sinister,
right?
But just
right.
He shared different things with different people.
Yeah.
And
do you have a history of any like emotional issues or anything?
Oh, he was an addict. I mean, he, you know, he had been sober the entire time I'd known him, and I think had been at that point for many, many years.
Yeah.
But was really heavily into drugs and alcohol and stuff when he was younger. And
uh-huh.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of emotional stuff that I think goes along with that.
What kind of drugs are we talking about?
I don't know for sure, but I would venture to guess that if it was in front of him, he probably did it.
Really?
But
yeah.
I mean, I think that to some degree there was a lot of that going on and the time when he was doing it. I mean, you're talking the 70s and 80s.
Right. Right.
Who wasn't doing everything.
Yeah.
So he, you know, had kind of scared everybody and disappeared. And, we all just kind of figured, well, that's Mike. He's probably in Mexico screwing around and having a good time and
he'll
show back up and have a great story to tell. A few more days went by, and that was when one of our friends called me and said, you know, we're worried to the point where we're going to call the police and we're going to file a missing persons report if we don't hear from him. And I said, well, the other thing we should do is get the word out in the news, because I mean, he's a public figure. Mm-hmm. And you know, mm-hmm. and at the time I was producing the morning news on Como. And so I said, look, I'm going to call him tonight. And if I don't hear from him, if I don't talk to him, I'm going to leave him a message saying, you know, you are the lead story tomorrow morning. If you don't call me back and just say, I'm fine, leave me alone, whatever.
Yeah.
And the phone never rang. So the next morning that was our lead story. And then the story grew from there and all the other media outlets picked it up. So
now, had anybody gone to his house to check? I mean, I imagine that somebody did, but
yeah, he had a close friend that was kind of helping. You know, would go with him to doctor's appointments if he had, you know, to be knocked out for whatever, have teeth pulled or whatever.
Right, right.
And, and I think, in fact, the day that ultimately that we learned later had been killed, that friend, I think, went to his house to pick him up, to take him to the doctor or something. And there was somebody there, and that person just kind of frantically said, hey, Mike's not here. Come back later.
Really?
Or whatever. And she just kind of thought, well, that's weird, but, you know, okay, whatever. We had plans, but fine. And kind of left it at that. Come to find out later, we believe that was one of the people involved in what ended up being Mike's murder.
Right, right. So how long had it been? Now, I guess maybe we should talk about first, like, how he was found.
He was found in his basement. So the basement of the house that he had been renting for about 20 years,
mm-hmm.
You had to go like out of the house around the back. And then there was this outdoor staircase down to the basement.
Right.
And I never went down there, but apparently, there was a crawl space in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so his body was found shoved into that crawl space, I believe under a tarp, with what we believe is the murder weapon, which was like a hatchet.
Really?
Yeah. And my understanding was that the crawl space, so whoever killed him, well, I mean, we know who's in jail for it now, but the person that killed him shoved him into this crawl space and then pushed like a bookcase in front of the crawl space. So when, you know, when eventually police were called about it being a missing persons case, they came and they even brought cadaver dogs just looking for anything. And they took them down there. And I mean, I guess that like the house just reeked and there like flies everywhere.
Cause this
like,
was in the summer too, right?
Yeah. And so my understanding is that the place just smelled horribly. But the dogs couldn't pinpoint where the smell was coming from. And so,
cause it was just everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's that. And they say that this isn't the case, but I have a hard time believing it. But Mike had a dog that that peed and pooped in the house a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to deal with that, he would let her hang out in the basement where she at least would be warm and crap and pee in the basement and not on his carpet.
Right, right.
So I kind of wonder if that interfered with the dog's ability to find the body.
Yeah, yeah.
But then other friends say that they had gone to the house at times and you couldn't smell anything. They had no idea what was going on.
How much time had passed between filing the missing persons report and actually finding his body?
I want to say it was like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I remember hearing, because I remember hearing the story and you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, him still being missing and an ongoing investigation and mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they find the body, yeah, it was like 3 months later.
Yeah. Right? And it's a very surreal experience to write about your friend disappearing, like, you know, from a media production standpoint, from a radio producer, like when I was writing the story about him being missing, you know, it was hard, but I kept thinking, this is going to end well. We're going to find him. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, everything's going to be fine. He's just going to be really, really drunk in Tijuana.
Yeah. And then, you know, I come in one morning and I read in the PI that, you know, that they, I mean, I knew that they found it, a body.
Right.
The day before they said that they found a body in the basement. They weren't sure who it was or whatever. And then they had identified him, but I didn't know the circumstances of how he was found. And when I read, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm at work trying to prepare a newscast. And the course of that is, you know, for the course of that, you read the paper to find out what's going on in the world.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'm reading about how my friend's body was found stuffed in the crawl space of his attic and he'd been murdered with a hatchet. I mean, that kind of breaks you a little bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And
so what when you first, you're reading through to schedule your show
mm-hmm.
and you come across that article, it must have been a front page, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it was the first thing I read. Yeah.
And so what's going through your mind at that point when you first read that, you know, those first words of the article?
I think, I don't know. It kind of starts to rip you apart really slowly. Like I remember reading it and we have at work what we call the love porch. It's basically, we have all these little patios around where you can step outside at any point.
Right.
At Fisher Plaza. And you know, it's 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I just stood up and walked outside, just to like try and get some air. Cause like I wanted to throw up and pass out and, you know, scream and, you know, kill somebody all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out there and then my friend came out, she was one of the anchors and she just hugged me and I just lost it. I totally just fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, you know, it was kind of over, you know, I mean, this thing that had consumed my life for a couple of months. I mean, I was doing a lot of TV interviews and, you know, everybody's calling and seeing if I was okay and asking if I'd heard from him. I mean, that it consumed my life for a couple of months and it just kind of ended in one of the most horribly violent ways I could have imagined. I mean,
yeah,
you've seen horror movies where somebody gets killed and they get stuffed in the wall.
Right.
Or they worse are like drywalled into a wall. And they just starve to death in there or whatever. Like those were the things that I was thinking. What if it's something like that? What if he's being tortured somewhere? What if he's shoved in a wall somewhere? And then to have, you know, at least partially that become reality, it kind of breaks you a little bit to have kind of your worst case scenario almost come true.
Was there a sense of relief at all at any point that it was over?
I think only once they caught the guy that did it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was where it, where you could finally breathe a little bit because, I mean, we all along, we kind of knew who it was. He'd taken in a roommate, who had, a lot of drug problems, and the story, the story that I'm told, and again, you know, Mike kind of told everybody different things, but the guy was a younger guy. He had a really bad drug problem. He was homeless, and Mike was really active in trying in helping people with recovery, and so he brought this kid in to live with him, and you know, that kind of was what it was, and I didn't know a lot about him or about their relationship or whatever, but my understanding was, so Mike did this radio show or his online, you know, podcast or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. And part of it was sponsored by a local car dealer who believed in him on Cairo. And when he got blown out of Cairo, he said, well, you know, I don't care about Cairo. I was sponsoring you. So I'm coming with you on your thing. And so part of that was Mike would drive this guy's cars and review them on the show and talk about, oh, you got to go buy the new Ford, whatever. It's a great car.
Yeah.
So he had one that he had been driving that weekend. The guy who was living with him, I guess, stole it and took it for a joyride and did whatever. And I don't think he wrecked it, but it had been stolen. And the guy basically just wanted an apology and wanted the guy to go into rehab. Like that was, he's like, I'm not going to press charges if you apologize and go into rehab and get your shit clean and, you know, and be serious about it. And so my understanding is that the day, or I guess the morning Mike was killed, or the night, I'm not totally clear on the timeline.
Right.
Mike was supposed to take him to that dealership for the apology and then take him to rehab. And that was that deal. So the story, as I remember it, is that Mike had done his show that night and went to go to bed. And the guy who was living with him was in the bed, and so like Mike laid down next to him and the guy said, well, I'm going to get up and go get a smoke and I'll come back and go to bed. Mm-hmm. And he leaned over to the side of the bed and picked up the hatchet and just turned and started swinging and just brutally murdered him with a hatchet.
Wow.
And he confessed to this?
You know, I think he did. Yeah, because the only reason I know that is because that was what he wrote in his statement.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember because it was a long legal battle. But yeah, eventually the guy was sentenced to the maximum for second-degree murder.
Second-degree murder?
Yeah.
How is that second-degree murder?
I think ultimately what it came down to was that
they gave him a deal to confess, it wasn't
even that as much as the prosecution was worried that they couldn't go after a first degree case because there was so much allegations of drug use and the defense, I guess, was trying to say that Mike had been using and there was,
right.
And they were
right.
worried that it was going to turn into this, you know, gay, you know, love affair that got out of control with sex and drugs and then it was going to end up looking bad and dragging the family through the mud and making them see all the photos and reliving all the horror and everything. So I think that the prosecution basically went, we can get second degree for sure. And so they ended up going for that. And I'll never forget the judge when he finally, you know, gave the guy the maximum, which was 20 years.
Were you in the room?
When he gave him the 20 years, the judge said, he all but said, I can't believe you didn't bring me a first degree murder case. This is one of the two most horrific, horrible murders I've ever heard in this courtroom.
Right. Right.
And the fact that I can only give this guy 20 years is unbelievable. Like he just lectured the prosecution for doing such a piss poor job. And the fact that, you know, when this guy gets out of jail, he will be younger than Mike was when he killed him.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I'll have to worry about him being on the streets with my daughter, you know, like that is not a fun thing to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I can only imagine how emotional that would be to hear that verdict dropped to him.
Yeah. And it was, cause we, you know, we were worried that there were rumors that the guy was only going to get 12 years or maybe 7 And I mean, we just kept banging our heads against the wall, just going, "How?
Right,
like, how
right.
is this all?"
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the guy's confession, we've got the weapon, we've got the body. I mean, I went to Mike's house after this had happened, after the investigation had concluded, and we were just kind of trying to help move stuff out. And at crime scenes, they do this thing where they are able to spray this chemical that reveals where blood is, where
right.
there's blood splatter.
Yeah,
and it turns it blue.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize until we'd left and Cheryl was explaining to me, like, I remember saying to her, I was like, I don't remember the stairs being blue and like the walls being blue. Why were the walls blue? Why were the stairs blue? Like, the carpet was blue.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, that was the blood. I mean, that they revealed that with the, and I mean, to me, I just like, God, did he paint his house? Everything was blue. I mean, they had to cut a chunk of the ceiling out. Because while the guy was wildly swinging this hatchet, he hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
So there's evidence of this horrible crime that they had to cut out of the house. I mean, there's a part of the ceiling was taken out. Like,
right. Right.
Just seeing
it's just totally brutal.
Yeah. Just absolutely disgusting, brutal. Horrible crime. And to kind of see how it played out, to see where, you know, basically he killed him and dragged him out of the house and down to the basement.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, basically the blood trail, it's horrific and haunts you.
So, you know, I really appreciate you being so candid about this and telling us this story, because I know it's probably got to be pretty emotional just to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because every time you kind of think about it, you know, it kind of drudges up these old emotions and stuff that you have about the trial and about your friend. Right.
Yeah, it does. And it is, I mean, it's funny. I haven't really thought about it as much, you know, since so much time has passed. And,
right, right.
But yeah, no, it's hard. It's such a unique thing too, because I mean, so many people do go through something like this, and then in the fact that it was part of my job too, like, you know, I think a lot of people can separate when they're dealing with tragedy by going to work and doing other things and trying to focus.
Right, right.
And, you know, I mean, my coworkers were like, what are you doing here, man? Just go home. And I just thought, well, if I'm not here doing something about it, or at least trying to get the word out, I'm going to be at home feeling like my hands are tied and there's nothing I can do there.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, there really was no escaping it.
Right.
No matter what. So,
yeah. Do you think that allowed you to kind of deal with it or confront the issues head on, the emotional impact of this head on?
Yeah, I mean,
and help you get through it.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was a couple of points where, you know, I kind of snapped. You know, when I read the guy who killed him, his name's Scott White. When I read his confession, I don't remember ever being so emotional in my life. Well, I mean, there's a couple other times, but I mean, to a point where you kind of disconnect from reality, because
you
try so hard to wrap your head around how could a human being do this to another human being? Like, just such a horrible, violent, selfish act. I mean, people do horrible, selfish things all the time, but I mean, to read this guy explaining what he said happened and to just try in some way to be in his shoes for a minute, to go, there had to be something like there. What can I sympathize with here? What, I mean, when we knew Mike was dead and we weren't sure how he had been killed, we were all praying that it was just like some fight that got out of hand and, you know, and he got knocked down and he hit his head on the table and the guy freaked out and didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, some like accidental violent death or whatever.
Yeah.
But to just, you know, to have someone plot, like to go, this is how I'm going to deal with this situation. I'm going to go get an axe. I'm going to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to beat this person to death with it. Like,
yeah,
just, I don't, it's exhausting trying to understand someone who does something like that.
Well, I don't think you ever can.
That was what I had to settle on. Like, I had to just finally say, I'm never going to get it.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't get it. It's, people that do this are severely broken.
Right.
And there's no fixing them.
Yeah.
However, he's going to be out in 15 years.
Yeah. Man. That's heavy. That's heavy stuff, man.
You're welcome. that's you know, that's kind of the sick part, is that, you know, working in the news long enough, you can kind of separate emotionally sometimes from stuff.
And
so, you know, if, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it, because it is a terrible, horrible thing. And, you know, and I know his family still is hurting a lot from it. But, but, you know, I know it also is an interesting story that people want to know about. So, you know, I just wish that somehow my telling it could prevent Scott White from ever seeing the light of day. And so if there's anyone listening to this interview and you're interviewing a felon for a job in 15 years and his name is Scott White, please don't hire him.
Yeah.
Because you'll end up dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just, that's an amazing story, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one thing that you've learned through that experience, what would it be?
I mean, it's wildly cliche, but, you know, just appreciating what you have when you have it. I mean, you know, like I said, I didn't realize how much of a mentor Mike was until he was gone. You know, I didn't realize how much I relied on him to bounce stupid ideas off of and, you know, and produce something and have him listen to it and say, you know, you should change that or do it that way. And just, you know, career path stuff. I mean, you know, we just talked for hours. I mean, my job literally was talking to the man for 6 or 7 hours a day to put a show together, and then we'd go do a show. And so once that was gone, I really realized that, you know, I didn't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you're frustrated because traffic sucks or, you know, it's a hard day at work or whatever, you know, just appreciate what you do have in your life, because somebody could take it away from you tomorrow.
And there's my phone.
Nice phone.
Yeah.
Well timed.
Well, Jeremy, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, sure.
We really appreciate you coming here and sharing that amazing story. And congratulations on being a new father.
And you as well.
Thank you, friend.
Yeah.
Where can we find your show? And Jesus.
Sorry.
Hi, how do we, you know what? We should have, we talked about this before we started the show. And maybe we should have started with the heavier stuff and then gone into the lighter stuff.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe you just you need to put up a picture of fluffy kittens on your website. You go look at that. Yeah, and that'll make people feel better. You can find us at thesiblingrivalry.com, part of the Noise Beam Network. Go to noisebeam.com because there's lots of other really good shows on there that
that's true
that people listen to,
including yours truly.
That's right.
Right. Right. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy.
My
really
pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And you can find us at air-raid.net. Send us your emails, aaron@air-raid.net. Also, you can find us on the Noise Beam Network, noisebeam.com/air-raid, I think.
Do we have time for one quick rant?
Yeah, totally.
I just want to say also, people should like the Noise Beam Facebook page and follow it on Twitter and like all of our shows, because I don't know about you guys, but I'm horribly insecure, and every time like one drops off, I panic.
Oh my God.
So everyone, please just like us, like us, and then like us again, and then tell your friends to like us, because it'll just make our egos grow. That much.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. It'll make us feel better about ourselves.
Yeah.
Makes us feel like that we're doing something that people actually enjoy, which we know that you guys do enjoy it because you download us all the time. Right?
Totally.
So just take it one step further.
I actually moved you up in my queue on Stitcher. I have my favorites. And,
wonderful.
I believe you are in, I think you're my number, I think you're my number two in my playlist.
Oh, look at that. Who's your number one?
My favorite is Mike O'Mara. The Mike O'Mara show is just hilarious. There it is. Mike O'Mara, then Air Raid, and then you got Stack of Dimes in there. You got Grapes of Rad. You got Planned Brotherhood in there. Yeah, lots
awesome.
Of good stuff.
Awesome.
All on Stitcher.
Wonderful. That's a great app for your smartphones.
Yeah,
you can find us on Stitcher. Find us on iTunes. Leave us your little star ratings. We love seeing those and your reviews. So once again, Jeremy, it's been a real pleasure having you on.
I thought we were going to be funny.
We were funny for half of it, right?
I just hope
it was fun.
I just hope the fluffy kittens help.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna put fluffy kittens as the picture on the show page.
There's your title, fluffy kittens.
And we're gonna go out today with a little bit more Romeo and Juliet.
I like those kids.
Yeah, RomeoandJulietBand.com. Check them out. They don't have any shows coming up because one of them is in Seattle, one of them is in Pittsburgh, so it's probably kind of hard to set shows up.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is off their album, Month of May. The song is called "Get in Your Square." And we're going to see you next week with John Richards from KEXP.
Ooh, good guess.
He's going to be on, and we're going to be talking with him about things and stuff.
Probably not murder.
Not murder. I don't know if we're going to talk about that ever again. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.